This episode is brought to you by Fat Expats. It's the new expat magazine that's coming your way next month. If you'd like to find out more about it, head over to twofatexpats.com. You'll see a pop-up and you can sign up and we'll shoot you some information. Hello, Nikki Moffat. How are you?
Well, I'm fine, thank you, Kirsty Rice, but I have so many questions for you. Like, how was your weekend? Should the AFL Grand Final be played at night or not? Also, you know, you went on a plane. That must be exciting. And what does domestic aircraft travel late 2020 look like in Australia?
Okay. So first, what was the first one was about the AFL Grand Final. Should it be played at night? I think it should be played in twilight. I think it should begin in twilight, which is a time that does happen. That is not an unreasonable request. Quite often we have in Australia 4 o'clock games and 5 o'clock games, and so they start in the daylight, finish in the nighttime. Interestingly, the players, while they all love the nighttime grand final, said that they didn't feel they had enough time to celebrate because by the time they got out of the change rooms, it was midnight. Do you know, by the time they'd done all the photos and interviews and media and, you know, talking to all the family and friends, they said it was over, which is interesting, isn't it? I hadn't sort of thought about that. I would like a kind of mix. I'd like a little bit of day and a little bit of night. What was it like being on a plane, Nikki? So strange. And so out of practice. Do you know, I got there and thought, I didn't bring my proper headphones and I didn't bring a scarf, like I always travel with a scarf, all these things that, you know, I have a bag that's packed with all that stuff all in it. No, didn't. And it's so strange because, yes, you mask up when you go onto the plane and you wear your mask on the plane. And when you get to the other end of where you're going, there is there's a section in where I went and where I came back to, both had a section of the airport where the gates have been converted and they are now filled with police and admin staff. And you go and you have your form that you've done online and you are asked a series of questions and then you are approved back in. But it did feel like something. All of the kids and I all said the same thing. It was quite confronting and like something out of a movie. Like if they made a movie about a pandemic, you would expect that scene where it's just busy and people are a bit lost and people don't know and I don't know if I've got the right ID and do you have a photo ID for your child? No, do you know, because who does if it's domestic travel? You're not traveling with your passport.
No. So that was my question. Those stations that you went to, did you go with your children or did your children, because they are young adult children, did they all do it separately? Or was the six turned up?
So the six of us turned up and then they kind of kept us together but next to each other, if that makes sense. So right. I want to say that when we arrived back into Adelaide, there must have been 40 different stations of staff there who were waiting, you know, show me your form, show me what you've done, show me your ID, and then firing a series of questions about you. Have you had a COVID test in the last week? Have you been to Victoria in the last week? Did you leave Queensland? Did you do this? Did you do that? You know, all the usual stuff.
No one asked you if you were a Kiwi, escaped Kiwi.
No, because the Kiwis don't have to quarantine. They are allowed everywhere.
Oh, now they are. Okay. But so apart from that, was the plane full?
The plane was full. And the plane was full both ways, both there and back. And I have to say that, you know, having not been anywhere apart from getting in the car and driving to my parents, it was an incredible sensation to get on a plane. I did not at once feel unsafe or worried about what we were doing. Obviously, we're going from one state where there's zero cases to another state where there's zero cases. So you do have a level of complacency, I guess, because you're thinking
or comfort,
yeah,
as well.
Yeah, so a level of comfort, I guess, with that. But you did just feel, I liked that everybody wore their mask still and everybody complied. You know, there was no one there that said, oh, this is ridiculous or why are we doing this? You know, everyone just went along with it. I loved that Australian, g'day guys, how are you going? Where are you going today? What are you doing? Yeah, just this relaxed. It's still that Aussie-ness still came through. But it was just so amazing as a family to go somewhere and stay in an Airbnb and have a holiday. It felt like a holiday. And you forget that all these things happen in your family when you have a holiday, where you sit and you have great conversations and, if you have that relaxed feel and relatives come to visit and you all have a good giggle about, you know, what grandma tells a story about when she was a kid. There is just a different feel where people don't have homework to do. They don't have a uni assignment. They don't have to rush off to basketball practice. You know, you're just there. And I had forgotten just the joy of getting away. And I think, you know, I was talking to some neighbours today and they said they did the same thing. They took their kids camping. And it's just that getting out of one location and going to another.
That's awesome. And it's good weather.
Yes. So what about you, Nikki? I want to know what's happening in your world over in Germany. I know that the press that I see is that it's getting colder, darker, and COVID scarier.
Yes. Well, I had my first COVID test this week because my Corona Warn app, which we've talked about before, when I said, you know, I had a close encounter and the app told me, and I expected bells and whistles and alarms. But I just, to be fair on that app, it was a green notification, which means that I had been near someone, but not for any length of time, or that the app determined that I was in no risk. This time I had a red encounter, so the app did tell me. It gave me a notification, said check the app, and I thought, oh, this is interesting, maybe they've updated their whole process. And then I logged in and said, okay, no, all right. So now it tells me that I have been in contact with someone who's tested Corona positive, and I was in proximity to them for a lengthy period of time and in close contact. And so that's quite a thing to get at 5 o'clock in the morning when you wake, when you have your little wake up session. So the app then tells you what to do. It says, please go directly home. Please stay 1.5 meters from other people and please call and arrange to have a test. And doesn't say, but then please call your workplace and tell them that you won't be in. But I did that too. So then I had to work out where I would have had this contact, because I'm only ever at work and at home and at the supermarket. And I assume that my last contact came from the supermarket because I wasn't near anyone long enough to do that. So luckily Google has me covered, because Google tracks your location all the time. And I had realized that the Friday night before, the Friday when it said, you know, it's been 5 days since this exposure to this Corona positive person. And I realized when I had a look at my location services for the Friday before, that I had been had a sneaky trip to the hairdressers on Friday night because I was worried they might shut again. So my vanity nearly did me in, because I thought I must get my roots done before the next lockdown. So it seems to have been the hairdressers. So I went to the doctor and she said, look, you know, you live in an apartment, so it could be people upstairs or downstairs from you. And we talked about that. I said, that's true. My husband has the app and he doesn't have any warning. She said, okay. In your office? I said, yep. I work with 7 people. We're all pretty at the moment because of COVID, you know, there's only 7 people in the office. And none of us have the warning, so it can't be anyone in our upstairs or downstairs offices. So I'm pretty sure it was the hairdressing place. She said, well, that's also in an apartment building. I said, yep, totally understand. She said, but you're right, you know, home and work, that would be your biggest risks outside that. So yes, we'll do the test. So I did the test. I had it's a very short turnaround. So within an hour, I knew that I was COVID negative, which was very, very reassuring in the end.
So you were able to do a test and get the result within an
hour? Yes, there are tests.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah,
there's rapid tests in Germany that are totally approved. And they use them in all sorts of places. And, yeah, I was able to get the result, although the doctor asked me to wait a day. So when I contacted her, it had been 5 days, and she said she'd feel more comfortable testing me on the 6th day since my exposure. So I had to wait a day to get the test. But, yeah, apart from that.
And what does the test involve? What do you have to do?
It was the whole down your throat and up your nose situation. And right. It was very uncomfortable, yeah. And I kept pushing my head back and saying, sorry, as I'm leaning away from the...
Is it just that they can then get the swabs to a lab and get that turnaround within the hour, or if they've got something there that they can...
No, it's my husband said, that's not a COVID test, that's a pregnancy test. Yeah. I said, when I showed him the picture, and I said, no, it's a COVID test. But it was very interesting to go to the doctors because... one person could be in the surgery at any time. And a lot of the doctors here are in sort of old apartment buildings, so that the hallways are very narrow. And so there isn't enough space. So
yes. You
have to be held in one room, and then the other person has to completely exit the surgery before you can move into the hallway and go into another room, etc. So all that was quite interesting because I haven't been to the doctor since this started. So that was an interesting sort of process and undertaking.
But I want to know, Nikki, and I'm probably asking you a far bigger question than you can tell me, but like if you can get that test result in an hour, that is wonderful news for the potential that if that test can then be cheap enough that we could do that in an airport situation.
Well, absolutely. So I did look into it because I was skeptical because people are saying, you know, rapid testing is not very, it's not necessarily giving you the best results and et cetera, et cetera. So I looked into whether you could buy the test online because the day before it happened to me, a friend's husband in the office, they'd had two positive cases, so they sent everyone home, and then they sent the rapid tests to their home. They couriered them all tests to do at home, and it was self-administered 15-minute test.
No. So you had to put it up your own nose and down your own throat.
I didn't actually ask her, is that what happened? But I assume the answer is yes. There's no way if I'd done it myself, I would have put it as far down my throat or as far up my nose.
No. How can that be? Because everybody says you've got to get it right. Do you know? You've got to do it properly and have it right. So now we can just still put it up our own noses and throats.
Well, I'm just explaining the situation here. And that's how Germany is currently using things to address it. But yes, look, it seems that, well, certainly the doctor I went to use those tests, so she's a doctor and I do trust her.
Yes.
So I have to trust someone, so I trust her. But the self-administered, I'm not 100% sure on. But yeah, I mean, we are definitely going into, so at the airport, so we have two big testing centers here at the airport and at the train station, the central train station. And anyone can go anytime and just line up and have a test. And they are makeshift situations, like you talked about, arriving at the airport. And then outside the train station is sort of their big tents, and you sort of walk in and go through the process. My husband did that when he came back from Copenhagen. He just walked in and he said there was no one there, and he just went through, and it's all very quick. And in that case, they take a QR code and they put it on your app. So when the test result comes through, your app gives you the response. Mm. So it's all sort of automated that way. Mm. And we've got four people in our office now who are currently sitting at home in quarantine because they've arrived in the country over the weekend after spending the weekend in Italy. And so they're all waiting for their test results, which they will receive on their app. So, yeah, I mean, that's what's going on here, Kirsty. So, which sort of goes into, if we go to the four fact questions now.
Yes.
For the week. So one of my questions to you was, how does Australia feel now that Victoria is out of lockdown? Because you know, we're heading back into more restrictions, but I've seen and all read all the things in the Australian media about the trauma of the second lockdown and how impacted people were. And so I'm interested to know how, I mean, I know you're not a Victorian, but how you feel the mood in Australia is in terms of Victoria coming out of such a difficult time.
I think we're all just so happy for them. Do you know, I think it really has been traumatic, and you know, you would have seen, Nikki, all of the footage of just, it was desolate in Melbourne. They've been working under a curfew. Everything's been shut. They had a great episode on the 7:30 report on, it must have been Monday night, showing four different businesses in Melbourne and sort of what that has meant to them and what life has been for them. And it just showed how much they were hanging on every word of every press conference. So Dan Andrews, the Premier of Victoria, has had daily press conferences since COVID began. And I guess the rest of Australia, that's what it was like for us at the beginning. And then as time has gone on, you know, we've all become COVID-free in our states. We haven't had any active transmissions in Australia, in Adelaide, since March. So we don't have daily press conferences. We don't, it doesn't get talked about. We talk about social distancing. We talk about different events. We talk about, you know, things like that, but we don't talk about active cases or what is going on. Whereas Melbourne, it just hasn't stopped. They've been like that since March. And so I think the general feeling is just pure relief for them. And, it just feels like they've been through so much compared to the rest of us. Relief and joy, just happy to see that it's over. That lockdown is over.
Yeah, that part. Yeah, it's so interesting because people who say to me, oh, Australia's doing great, isn't it? Like, they don't have any cases. I say, yeah, they don't have any cases necessarily. They don't have a lot of cases, but there are still places with really substantial restrictions. And people are always really interested to hear that given the really low numbers, how the substantial restrictions were still in place. So it's kind of hard to explain it from the perspective here.
I wonder whether what will happen is Australians will collectively, once Victoria is clear and their borders are open, whether people will, because I know I really want to go to Melbourne and I really want to support Melbourne because I do feel, and I feel that that's what's required, that we've all had a good run here in South Australia and that we should be showing them support. And I keep seeing the ads for Melbourne and what they've been through and how far they've come and what they need to do and getting back out there. And I think, yeah, it makes me want to go to Melbourne and it makes me want to go and spend some money in Melbourne to try and support them because they've really had a really hard time.
Okay, Nikki Moffat. Moving along to our second fat expat question. This was a question from Christine Todd, who is in our Two Fat Expats group. And I just love the question. And I noticed that you were in there as well and said, Kirsty, maybe we need to have a discussion about this. But she said, what are some of the things you're having a hard time finding in your adopted country as an indirect result of COVID? And her big thing was a bike tire that she was trying to get get in Qatar. And it was something like, I wanted 27, you know, whatever,
and a
27
half
and a half inch bike tire. And then someone said, oh, God, that's the same here. But there were all sorts of things like yeast and flour, which we can all remember from the initial first lockdowns, but bikes. And someone said IKEA was out of Billy bookshelves, which was a complete travesty. And the people that were heading into winter, and like I've noticed, Nikki, in your wording, you say before we go into lockdown again, as if everyone is just assuming that you're going to go into lockdown again, patio equipment and gas heaters and fire pits, you know, things that will make it more enjoyable at home, elastic for homemade masks. So tell me, Nikki, I can't talk because I'm here in Australia. I can tell you one thing I really miss from Qatar, though, that I cannot get here, and that is
pomegranates only come as whole pomegranates, whereas in Qatar, you can get pomegranate seeds. You can go to the supermarket and you can buy a whole container just full of pomegranate seeds. But shock, horror, I actually have to de-seed my own pomegranates here.
No such requirement in Germany. There's plenty of pomegranate seeds you can buy in the supermarket here.
What is that? So tell me, but what have you noticed in Germany that is scarce?
Well, yeah, I think we're pretty similar to some of the other places. Peloton launched coincidentally as the pandemic hit Germany. Peloton Germany launched. And so that was quite successful for them, and they quickly ran out of stock of bikes.
Yes.
That was a big success. Home exercise equipment everywhere the world over. I had a friend in the States for the summer. She said, you can't get a kettlebell. There's a 3-month wait for a kettlebell to be delivered to your house, because of course gyms being shut mean the home exercise market is massive. I know I read in Australia you can't buy a caravan or a tent because they're all underway. And also, Kirsty, as you have done, but not for necessarily that reason, COVID puppies are a big thing. So there's a really undersupply of dogs globally.
Oh, I'm so glad you mentioned tents, because, you know, last year or the year before, I went to Aldi to get some lamb chops and came out with a 10-man tent. So I'm so glad that I've got that still in its box in the shed, because, you know, I might be able to sell that.
If you need some extra money, now might be the time to level up, especially never open tent. Hello. And trampolines were very big here. So if you didn't have a trampoline, an outside trampoline for people with houses, to buy one for the kids, because when your kids can't go riding around the streets by themselves for hours and hours and hours or whatever, so to have a trampoline to just like get run outside on the trampoline, it just gives you sort of that bigger option. And I know that there was a shortage here for a little while with those things, but we're back to being rationed again. I went and bought dried yeast the other day, and the checkout lady checked how many packets I had. I was like, okay. I feel that we're going to be back to the signs on the shelves soon that tell you how many things you can buy, only one,
yes,
anything with disinfectant and soap and toilet paper, yeast, flour, bread and eggs. I think they were the things that were had the signs up. But yes, that's I just thought it's interesting because every country has its own sort of quirks in terms of things. But how an IKEA can call itself IKEA when it doesn't have Billy bookcases is beyond me. They should have had to take their sign down until they were restocked. Okay, Kirsty. So another thing that came up in the group this week was about how you help your kids adapt to a new country with cultural sensitivity if they're in local schools or sporting groups or clubs and they're used to an international environment or an international community or living in another country. Because there was a post about a child bragging on a scouts trip about when they were talking about what their favorite beaches were, and the person lists beaches in other countries and said the only beach they'd been to in America was called Clearwater, and they didn't think the water was very clear, which I think is a totally legitimate call. But it brought up the issue of and an issue that parents talk about a lot, and kids, you know, grown up TCKs, third culture kids or cross cultural kids, talk about all the time. You know, where do you come from? Where's home? What do you do on holidays? And so I just wonder, because your kids have experienced that, they've gone from an international community and an international lifestyle to a local community and local lifestyle when they're going to their schools in Australia. So I thought we should ask an expert.
Janik, I guess before I say what I'm going to suggest, I want to acknowledge that we have to listen to our kids and recognise their feelings, and sort of, but we also have to promote a bit of empathy to others when we're talking to our kids about this stuff, because everybody comes with their own battles and they come to the conversation with their own story. And what I mean by that is, when your children are telling you, you know, how terrible it is for them because they can't talk about these things and they can't discuss what they've done and where they've been or whatever. We kind of have to understand that maybe the people they're talking to would desperately love to have done a few of the things that they've done, and that that's why they don't really want to hear about it. And it's a tough one, right? Because we don't want to tell our kids that they shouldn't talk about things, that they shouldn't say who they are and what their experiences are, because then you're not being you, are you? But it's also important that when you're talking to people, you're asking them lots of questions about them. So it's a really tough one. And this is a skill we only really learn as adults, right? As adults, we can see it all over someone's face when they glaze over and they're like, oh God, she's going to tell that story about, you know, when she had the pâté in Paris again, or she's, you know, going to tell us about the beach in Thailand or whatever. And you learn as an adult, you know, people don't really want to hear about my vast life experience. And it's because people really want you to be with them in the here and now. They want you to experience life with them right now. And it's too easy when we often talk about our locations or our holidays or our previous jobs at what we're doing. It sounds like we're sort of reminiscing about what was such a great thing before that we're not really digging it now, which in this specific conversation, that was what was happening. The mother was saying that the child really wasn't liking it so much in the States.
Yeah.
And that he wasn't really finding his people yet. The situation that was explained was, you know, he talked about, you know, all the places he'd been, and the scout leader said he was bragging, which is a really bad, bad call of the scout leader. Like, seriously. You know, but that also shows you where the scout leader's coming from. Because the scout leader sees that as bragging. They don't recognize that, oh, hang on, this kid's just a fish out of water and they're trying to give a bit of themselves. So I think with my kids, they just knew. Like my first daughter, and I guess maybe it was from years of either being the new kid or watching the new kid arrive, she just knew that it was highly problematic to talk about your previous location too much. Do you know? You're allowed to talk about it, but you can't get stuck in it. And so I remember hearing her tell the other children as they were going to go, each one of them, you know, make sure you ask lots of questions. People, you know, like she would say, they love to talk about themselves, meaning the other kids at school really like to talk about themselves. Ask them all about where they've come from and what they do there and what it looks like. But don't tell them about Doha because they won't get it, which is really sad. But it's also really smart because we all know that that's what people are like. If I go back to my hometown now, I know that if people ask me a question about my life, they don't really want to know all about what it's like in Doha. They just want a general answer because they're not in that life. Do you know? It's not going to mean anything to them, you know? And so it's a great life skill to have. It teaches you how to read people, and it teaches you, you know, that as we get older, people actually love those mysterious things about you. Oh, I didn't know that about you. I didn't know you'd done that. Do you know? That's amazing that you've done that. So I think it's a tough one because it's very easy to think, oh, I'm not letting my child be themselves. You know, I'm denying them who they are and their experiences. But you're not, I don't think. I think you're teaching them how to jump into the next experience and also how to find their people. But it's a very, very hard skill for a young child and a big expectation. What do you think, Nikki?
Yeah, look, I think all the things you've said are spot on. And I find it just really sad in a way that people have to bury that part of themselves, particularly if living in those countries has brought out special things for them and been very special for them. But I do remember when I was at uni, when I was 19 or whatever, And over the summer holiday, a few of us went to my boyfriend at the time, now my husband's 21st in Adelaide, and everyone like drove down over a few days and stayed for a week all together, like sleeping in, you know, on couches and in the backyard, and went back. And then when we got back, it was all the people that had been there talked about, you know, we just said, you know, oh, remember in Adelaide this and Adelaide that. And my friends were saying, In Adelaide. And I was like, yep. Okay, yep, I get it.
Yeah.
But we had had this amazing time, like for 10 days, all of us had done this great trip and we just had this most amazing time. And, but that's what it reminds me of. Like when I think that, and I think like I was 19 or 20 and when I learned that lesson. So for kids to have to learn it at a younger age, I think you're absolutely right. It's a great life skill. And asking people questions about themselves is the first thing rule of, you know, small talk and conversation, etc. So it's great that our kids can have that information. At the same time, I really think it's sad. Like my daughter, when we were in America, she would say, you know, to her friends in kindergarten, you know, I was born in China. And they'd say, no, you're not Chinese, you weren't born in China. And you know, she'd come home crying and said, they don't believe I was born in China. I was like, you know, sweetheart,
yeah,
it's fine, you know. Yeah, it's okay. But things come up, you know, like things in class where you have to say, I was born, you know, and they're all born there because my kids were in a local primary school. So, and then, so it's really hard when your kids are asked to provide information and then that information causes them problems or heartache. And, you know, I mean, we're past that now, but so it's a really difficult question. And, you know, I have a friend here who's an adult, you know, CCK, he grew up all around the world. And when I have been in conversations with him when he's meeting new people and people say, where are you from? He said, you know, that's a great question. He said, this is the way I answer it. And he said, it depends whether I'm talking to these kind of people, these type of people, these type of people, those type of people. And he has sort of four answers for where are you from. And it depends on the people that he's interacting with, where the things you're saying there about going back to your hometown or whatever. But if you're in a new international location and you met someone and, you know, where have you lived, you're really interested in the other places they've lived.
Yeah.
Because one, you may have lived there too, or two, you may have always wanted to live there or move there, or that there's all sorts of information you want to know about their international lifestyles. But that's looking at it from an like a perspective of you being in the same situation as them in another country. So it's almost like you're going to your own hometown situation.
But at the same time, do you know, when I moved to Jakarta and I'd been in Jakarta for a while and I made a friend who'd moved from Oman, and we used to, this is going to sound very Jakarta and very expat, we used to play golf. but we would go to golf.
Wow.
And the entire nine holes, she would talk to me about Oman, what life was, how good it was in Oman, what their house was like in Oman, what the schooling was like in Oman. And she just wasn't digging Jakarta, and she just could not get her head around it. She was a Kiwi. And I remember I used to get in the car and think, geez, she really needs to get over Oman. Do you know, like, and it was, everything started with, well, in Oman, we used to do this. In Oman, we used to do that. And I have to say, most people I know that have lived in Oman, they're all like that, because Oman sounds like it's a fantastic place to live. But so it can happen anywhere. I mean, when I went to boarding school, I talked incessantly about my hometown in Renmark, and someone eventually had to tell me, just shut up about Renmark. You know, we don't care about what you did down at the Rau Creek. We don't care who drove the car to whatever. We don't care, you know, because I used to talk about my friends and what we did on the weekend because I miss them so much and I love them and whatever. It's one of those things you do and you work out later. If you're someone that's moved around a lot, you work out later, you know what, I need to get in the here and now because no one cares. My girlfriend Ange, when she moved to Brisbane, I remember that was the one thing she said at the school gate, that she realised nobody cares. They don't care where I've lived or what I used to do or whatever. They just don't care. And kids are even more brutal, aren't they? Because they just want you to jump in and join in and move on. And it's just that's the whole thing about moving. You know, is that there's a time and a place to kind of talk about your old life. Yeah, it is a tough one. Okay, Nikki, you and I are both Australian women, and I'm a permanent resident of Qatar. While I don't really look like one right now, I am. I've got the residency permit to prove it. You're a permanent resident of Germany. And recently, very sadly, there's a story of a baby that was found in the toilets of the Hamad International Airport in Doha. The baby was, according to the Qatar official statement, found in a garbage bin in the toilets. Now, subsequently, after the baby was found in the garbage bin, all flights were grounded and women were taken from the planes, and they conducted searches of these women, intimate searches. Now, I'm really loath to comment on this story. I don't want to comment on this story because I know that the report is yet to be released, so we don't really have all the details. So I can't see that we can comment on it. But I did have a question about this, Nikki, with you, because you're in Germany and you're reading different press and you're seeing different things. The only stories I have seen have been in Australian newspapers or in The Guardian, and they have only talked about Australian women. I've heard that there were 14 Australian women that were taken off of different flights, not just one flight, but many different flights. I have not heard about any other international women that were taken off of the plane, and I haven't read any other stories, and I wondered whether you had.
I haven't, because I first saw it in an Australian press, as you did. You brought it to my attention, and then I started following the story in the Australian press. I sort of had a look, and it's starting over the last 24 hours to appear in international press sort of situations. There was a New York Times article, but you say it's an Australian story, and it's really weird. Like, they say that there were 10 planes that I saw today, that the Australian Foreign Minister said there were 10 planes that this was impacted, that it impacted by this. But, for example, the New York Times headline said, "Women on Qatar Airways flight are strip searched, sparking outrage in Australia."
Yeah.
Like, and, you know, and the Irish Times said, "Shell-shocked, outrage in Australia after women on flight strip searched in Qatar." I think they might have reworded the New York Times headline. But, you know, I just think, and there was another one headline that really annoyed me. Yeah, women say they underwent invasive internal examinations at Doha Airport. And I'm just like, it's so weird that it just is an Australian story. And the outrage is in Australia. Like, the international press is being very careful at saying Australians are outraged by this. You know, there shouldn't be outrage everywhere, but Australians are outraged. The other thing is, if there's 10 planes, why has nobody else reported this story? And the other thing is, why did the reporting in Australia take so long? Yeah. I mean, it was 20 days from the incident till it hit the press through reporting by a Channel 7 reporter. I mean, I have so many questions about that. I mean, I feel terrible, absolutely terrible for the baby and for anyone that underwent that situation and had to be taken off, and to read the accounts of it, it sounds really, really scary. Mm-hmm. And people were obviously highly distressed. But then all the women that went to Australia, we know Australia has a 14-day quarantine law. So they had to, that happened to them. They went on the plane, they got to Australia, then they had to go and sit for 14 days by themselves, or, you know, just with their family in a quarantine environment. And then after that, even a week after that, I think it was a week after they were theoretically all released from quarantine till the story came out. I just don't understand how, with so many people involved, that the story was kept under wraps for so long and why. And maybe the reporting will, when the final reports come out, it will explain that in some way. But I found it really, they're the questions I have. You know, in today's age of social media and, you know, all sorts of bits and bobs I know there were 13 women on one flight and they all formed a WhatsApp group and a support group, and I think that's fantastic. But so surprised that 13 people could, all different reasons, could agree to not go to the press. Or I mean, I don't think it's the first thing you do, I'm going to call the press. But if you feel, they must have all felt very reassured by the Australian government that something was being done. That's all I can feel, that they reported at the airport and the Australian government said, please, we will deal with this, but, you know, we ask you to not go to the press. I don't know.
Even, you know, Nikki, you and I are in all those quarantine groups and you know, I was thinking, I'm amazed that there wasn't one person that wrote in one of those quarantine groups, you know, don't fly through Doha, or be aware that this is happening, or this did happen, or this just happened to me in Doha. So, you know, be careful. Or, but nothing, like absolutely no word, nothing. And I agree with you. It would have been hideous because I can see it. You know, I was talking to my husband last night, and he was saying about when they found out that he had cancer in Doha. In amongst all of the hoo-ha and the confusion, because you're dealing with a lot of people that English is a second language, and also people that are just instructed to do certain things to you. So maybe it's medical staff that are just told, now do this, and away they go. And he said a woman came into the room and she had a hose and something else and just said, enema. And he went, what? And she said, you will have enema. And he said, but why? And she just stared at him vacantly and said, yeah, you will have enema. And he said there was that, you know, moment of, I don't want an enema, and I want you to tell me why I need an enema, but I know that I'm going to get nowhere with this because you have got the hose.
I'm getting an enema.
Yes, I'm getting an enema. Now, I don't want to laugh and make it sound like I'm flippant. I know from living in a country where a foreign language is spoken, or a foreign language to me is spoken, that there are times daily, sometimes hourly, when you first move, where you don't understand what's happening and you feel fear. But like I said, Nikki, I'm loath to comment because we don't have all the details yet, and so we'll have details, I hope, in the future that will come up. But I wonder, Nikki, is this going to change the way people transit, or will people quickly forget? But is this something where, because I have seen on so many pages since this has been released, so many people have said, I will not fly through Doha. So I know that I have flown through many locations where I've thought, well, I'm just transiting. Like, I'm not leaving the airport. What's the big deal? But is this going to make people think, oh, no, I'm not transiting through there?
Yeah, I mean, it possibly by the time travel returns to finger in the air normal, it could be that people don't think about that. Or have forgotten that they've made that statement. At the moment, there are very few ways for Australians to get home. And Doha has been a reliable way. People have had not many cancelled flights through that airport, and people have used it as and that's what I've seen in the quarantine groups. People are saying, don't go that way, go another way. And people are saying, how? What other way? Like, there are no other flights for me to book. I have to go that way. And I wouldn't go. Mm. And I saw someone say, well, I'm a guy, I'd go that way, but I wouldn't go that way if you're a woman. And someone said, do you have a wife, a child, a mother? Like, you know, like if you're saying, oh, it's fine for me, but I, you know, if you're a woman, you shouldn't do it. Like, there's just so many things to consider. But it's a really terrible story on all fronts. I feel for everybody involved in it. Hopefully, you know, there'll be some outcome that is positive, and that people get information that they want to know. Because, you know, as a resident, it's different for you than it is for me. But you know, for anyone that travels, or, you know, anyone that was involved, answers would be good.
Yeah, and just the poor, poor woman who gave birth in a toilet in an airport. It's the most horrendous thing to consider, someone being so alone and having, I don't know, Nikki, I just can't even get my mind around just the horror of that. Mm. Okay.
Yeah, 100%. Okay, Kirsty, in nicer things to think about. So 66 days to form a habit, Kirsty.
So I have been stretching. What I haven't been doing is posting. That is my kryptonite, I have to say. So I'm doing my 66 days of stretching. I even got my exercise physiologist to take a video of me, Nikki Moffat, because I thought, right, I'm going to share. And then I looked at myself in my activewear on the ground doing my stretches and thought, oh, I'm not quite sure if I'm ready to share that much. But I'm putting the post up today. I promise you, but by the time I've edited this podcast, that I will have a post up, hashtag 66 days to form a habit, and I will be doing my stretching. I also saw that the lovely Lisa, who's probably out running somewhere now while she's listening to this, she is going to do 66 days of planking, and Carmel, who's a listener, is going to do 66 days of intermittent fasting. That's a good one. I might even join her on that one once I've maybe knocked down 15 days of stretching in a row.
Yeah, I know. I have just to say that I recorded extensive video on my first day that I haven't yet posted because I wanted to do some other social posting. And it's here I am trying to turn the Peloton on. Here I am sitting on the Peloton. So I will also post those videos before this podcast is released. So they will be on the socials.
So, Nikki, no excuses. For the next 66 days, a post every day, you and I are going to do a post every day, 66 days of. And if there's anyone out there that's doing, wants to create a habit, it takes 66 days to form a habit, pick your thing and come join us. Hashtag 66 days of.
So, Kirsty, we also this week received a speak bike message from Nuala, and she, bless her, she was doing the stairs. Her voice, her message was very echoey, and I thought, oh, that this is bad reception. But no, she said, I'm just listening to your podcast and I'm catching up, and I want to let you know that I'm doing the stairs in my building.
Oh, that's very cool.
And she said, so where I'm listening is in the stairs. And she said that that was her regular lockdown exercise, was running the stairs. So I'm thinking of Nuala this week, and perhaps she's doing 66 days of stairs. But thank you so much for the message. We do love to hear where you're listening to the podcast from. And
hey, did you see the message? Did you see the message from the lovely Miss Shardy, who was singing away to the theme song of our podcast while she was out in what she calls bum truck nowhere? I thought that was very cool.
I missed that.
I'm going to share it.
Yes.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, I didn't.
Oh, I'm sure she sent us both a message, maybe on Messenger, and it had her preparing sort of lunches for the workers. And I'll share it in our Two Fat Expats Facebook group, and I'll tag you in so you can see it, because I thought it was great. Okay, Nikki, three favorite things. Now, I have to say, my three favorite things, I haven't really watched any telly or seen any movies or done anything like that this week because we were away. And I
Kirsty, got you covered.
Yeah.
Got you covered, don't worry.
Oh, good. So I had my daughter's graduation on the Friday.
Oh, yes.
And then we hopped on it.
So many things.
Yes. And then we hopped on the plane on the Saturday morning, and then we literally got back last night at midnight. So, but I do have a few things that I have really enjoyed that I thought I'd share in case anyone hasn't. I think everyone will know this woman. Her name is Julie Nolke. She's the woman who's done all those conversations with her former self about COVID. And there's three videos. And the first one's called Explaining the Pandemic to My Former Self. She's Canadian, and I'll put a link to that, but I'm sure most people have seen them. But I just thought her story was really interesting too, because she's a Canadian comedian who I guess had, you know, got a bit of work, and she decided to sort of put up a YouTube channel. And so she taught herself all about how to do that and how to get it all happening. And she said, you know, most of her videos, she was lucky, you know, she was got really excited once because she had 4,000 people watch one video. So then she makes her Explaining the Pandemic to My Former Self video. It's now had 17 million views. But there's a great article about her in McLean's, which is a Canadian magazine. So I've put a link to that up there because she kind of talks about how she got the step ahead with the pandemic from other comedians because she'd had this YouTube channel up and running. So she was saying there were all these incredibly successful comedians who were at home, but they'd never had to do all stuff themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah, and do all of that. So that was quite interesting. Okay, and then the other one, if you want the Australian equivalent, I really love Kitty Flanagan. Do you know Kitty Flanagan, Nikki?
Yes.
So she's on The Project. She's very good. And but one of the things she'd done was educating your kids on sex and porn. It's just a 4-minute, 20-second video, but it's so, so clever. And I think the major point she makes is that porn kind of normalizes sex acts that maybe many women really don't enjoy, but it's all done in this very funny comedic nature where she's trying to promote the vagina and it's very, very good as an alternative obviously to other things. But that I would watch, and I'll put the link there. And then the last thing that I watched that I really liked was from BBC Ideas, and it was Do We Think Differently in Different Languages? And it had a lot of linguistic experts, but then people who spoke in different languages who talked about how it how they believe it changes their personality. So one woman was saying she feels that she's far more grounded speaking German, but then very assertive when she speaks Dutch because you have to get straight to the point.
It's so bizarre that Dutch people could be more straight to the point than Germans. Yes. But okay.
But, you know, with German, I've never heard it explained like this. They said it was like Lego. You just add another word to the word and then it just makes it more precise. And
yeah, it's correct.
And it wasn't until someone explained it like that I thought, that's exactly what it's like. And I don't know German. I don't speak German, but I can see that with German, that it is. You just add more things as you go along. They were explaining how French is very gendered, so everything is either masculine or feminine. So then you have to feel very much like one or the other. So if you have a word like bridge, if it's in a language where it's carrying a masculine gender, the bridges are described by people slightly differently. So its usefulness or its power might be associated with feminine gender, whereas its strength and its size might be masculine. And then just how that changes what's going on in your mind. But the last one that I thought was really interesting was a color test. And they were saying English speakers really struggle to identify color because it is just red, green, yellow, or blue. But there are many languages, and I had no idea of this, that they have a term that denotes like the kind of green or blue. So Himba is the language in Namibia. And they were saying that if you show a color palette, like so you'll show a shade of green to someone who speaks Himba, and then you'll show them a color palette and they can easily recognize the color that they've seen, whereas an English speaker really struggles to find that exact color that they've just seen. I find that amazing.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, it makes all the things you've said make perfect sense. And I noticed that by working in an office of Italians, I really notice. We have our Italians and Argentinians, and I really notice in the way, even in the way they speak English, because that's the language I converse with them in, I notice how they treat things and situations differently. And I think it's because of your native language that you do that.
Yes.
But those things that you've just said make total perfect sense.
Yeah. And it also, it just showed you that it's a great reason to learn another language because it's literally a whole different perspective.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Mm. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. What about you, Nikki?
Well, as I said, got you covered on the TV watching. So this week, a couple of things. The Queen's Gambit, which is new on Netflix.
Right.
Now, it's a novel. It's based on a novel by someone called Walter Tevis. I haven't read the novel. And it's the blurb says it's a coming of age story that explores the true cost of genius. Abandoned and entrusted to a Kentucky orphanage in the late 1950s, a young Beth Harmon discovers an astonishing talent for chess while developing an addiction to tranquilizers provided by the state as a sedative for children. Haunted by her personal demons and fueled by a cocktail of narcotics and obsession, she transforms into an impressively skilled and glamorous outcast while determined to conquer the traditional boundaries established in the male-dominated world of chess. Now, that sounds like a little bit like paint drying, right? So do you want to see a girl in an orphanage grow up and be good at chess? Not sure. But the series is really amazing. It's beautifully... I think it's really well cast and it's lovely. The cinematography is really lovely. I mean, it's not great big sweeping landscapes or anything, but just the way it's all filmed, I really enjoyed. And it was just, it was not super light, but it was not super dark. So, but it made chess seem quite interesting and it made me go and read some things about chess, which is not something that's ever really appealed to me. But also, you know, it's got the story of, you know, and I assume it's true that in the 1950s in orphanages, all the kids used to, you know, be given their vitamins, and in the vitamin set was a tranquilizer. And in the orphanage, one of the girls who's been there a longer time says to her, you know, save the green one because the green one's good at night. You know, don't have the green one now. Oh. And sort of, and shows how she, or the blue one, I can't remember which was the good one. It shows how she becomes addicted, and then the law changes, and they can't have them anymore. And it, you know, she really struggles, and then that leads sort of to an addictive, well, then she has an addictive personality. She gets adopted by someone who's lost their child, and I'm not telling anything to give away the story, and you know, then her, you know, it all goes from there. But it is really quite enjoyable, and it's something you could watch with the family. Like, it'd be good for you to watch with any of your kids if you want to watch.
Oh, that sounds good.
So that's, I put that on the list. The other thing was, so last week we talked about Emily in Paris. This week I'm talking about another expat show. I can't remember, Kirsty, whether you've told me to watch this before, but Ted Lasso on Apple TV.
No, I have seen that up there, but I haven't watched it yet. Is it good?
So someone said it's everything that Emily in Paris is not. But basically, it takes American folkiness to a new level of sophistication. The warm hug you need in 2020. So it's based on a character that was in a series of TV commercials on a US television station. So proving that you can make something out of nothing. When the US station started carrying Premier League soccer games, they had to try and explain it to the American audience. So they created this character and made commercials around it. So this character now is meant to be a US NFL coach who has no experience, and he gets flown into the UK to coach a soccer team, which appears to be what the owner of the soccer team got in her divorce. And she's like, I'm bringing in this coach to change everything up, but she's got obviously a secret plan underneath it because, you know, she's trying to punish her ex-husband in a certain way. But, you know, an American in the UK, hilarity ensues. He's just so folksy, so nice, you know. It's just... It's really, so my friend Jules, who I talked about last week, said to me, she was a little bit appalled with my Emily in Paris, but did suggest Ted Lasso as a substitute. And it is a show about men's sport and does have a lot of male characters, but there are a few good, strong female leads in it. And I read part of a review that said, you know, in a show about a men's sports team, the two female leads are complex and intelligent and have their own dynamic that's independent of whatever the men are doing. And I think that is a great way to explain it, because it is a predominantly male cast, whatever, but they do have two really strong women, and their storylines aren't dependent on what the storylines of the men are. If you know what I mean. So, which in a TV show like that, it's sometimes can be hard to sort of separate those things. So anyway, I highly recommend that. It's also a family thing. It's funny and folksy and whatever. And my last thing is quickly my daughter's blog from when she was 6 years old. So
Are you recommending this for all of us to read?
I'm not recommending. No, it's one of my favorite things. Okay. It just popped up in my Facebook memories. Aww. And that's what I love. You know, Mark Zuckerberg can be bad, but I just love him for this, that, you know, he's showing me that 8 years ago I shared a post that she had it was a draft post, and it was called Things My Brother Has Called Me. My brother called me a bitch, also an idiot. And my comment on the Facebook post was, here's a draft of, you know, her next blog post. Her brother just wandered past and said, "Mom, she's missing a T." Because in the word bitch, there was no T. So he was more concerned about the spelling rather than that she was publicizing what he had called her. But it was just, it had some really very sweet things. And I said it to her. She said, "I'm not reading that." I said, "No, let me read one to you." "No, no, no." Oh, and she post and said, "I had a wonderful time in kindergarten, ! Now it's time to move into bigger and better things. I love my friends and my teacher, but as my mum always says, I need to stay strong, ! I don't ever remember saying she needs to stay strong, but I'm so glad she had a wonderful time in kindergarten, ! Like, it's just got some very sweet things, and she obviously kept it for a few years. And there are posts in there that I didn't even know she'd written. There's not super many, but it's just one of those things that it's really lovely to have, and it proves that on the internet nothing goes away.
No. And do you know what? I want to know from other people, because I too, Nikki, that's my absolute joy from Facebook, is when you get a little flashback of, oh, God, that's right, remember that, or remember this, and you see it and you see. I think mine today was that it was, I think, 10 years ago today that we had to quickly get out of the house because we were having a home inspection in Houston. And I go, everything that's happened to us in that time, like, it's been jam-packed. So it was quite something. It kind of takes you back to a whole different time, and you can picture it and picture the little faces and the people and the stress. But what I find with my children, and I want to know if this happens with everybody, is the minute you say to a child, "Oh, look at this from 7 years ago," your teenager will instantly go, "Oh," and doesn't want to look at it, doesn't want to know about it, is not remotely interested in 7 years ago of what they looked like or how cute they were. And my husband and I, in our family WhatsApp chat, we're constantly throwing those pictures in, "Oh, you know, 6 years ago today," or "Here we are at the baseball tournament," or whatever. And we get zero bars back from the kids on, you know, their thoughts or feelings on it. And is it just because when you're young, you don't look back, you don't care, because you've got so much ahead?
Look, I think that's true. And I remember I didn't care about anything until I had a baby. And then I was like, and then I was like, when did I walk? When did I crawl? When did I say my first word? What was my first word? You know, when did I do all these? And my mom's like, I don't know, like, about then.
Yes. Yeah. I have one of those mothers that if you say, you know, "What time of the day was I born?" "Oh, gee, I'm not sure. Do you know?
Well, it doesn't matter. You're here, aren't you? So I think that over time that they will be grateful for that. And, you know, although this is the way all our electronic memories are stored, so we will have to work at some stage, you know, in getting them all out of Facebook and putting them somewhere so our children can have them in the future, because it's, if anything's sure, is that, you know, things will evolve and those things will go away at some stage.
Nikki, I have an update on that. Remember the broken hard drive?
Oh, the broken hard drive.
So the broken hard drive went to Vladimir with 36 CDs of photos and videos and whatever, and Vladimir got back to me last week and said, "Your broken hard drive was well and truly broken, but I've managed to retrieve 50% of your data." So
he's paid 50% of the cost?
G is, as we speak, he has collected the hard drive. I said to him, "Well, how do I make sure this doesn't happen again?" He said, "Well, you're going to copy this hard drive onto another hard drive, and you're going to have two hard drives, you know, so that if one dies, you've got the other one. But yes, I am very excited because we've got everything, you know, from, I think, yes, there's going to be some things I've missed, but to be able to get at least half of it back was amazing. So I'm busting to see it. And I think, and I can safely say that none of my children listen to this podcast, but I'm thinking I might actually do that as a bit of a Christmas present, is try and get some of that stuff together and give them, you know, some sort of little book or something. Even though they don't care, they will one day.
They will one day. Absolutely, they will care one day. And exciting news as we wrap up the podcast for today.
Yes.
Is that I've just had notification from two of our staff. I said at the beginning that we had, I think, four people in quarantine. Two of them have just received their negative test results. Oh, so they wonderful. Will be in the office this morning. So exciting news. In Germany. That's how we measure our day, by the number of negative test results.
Oh, I'm pleased. I am really pleased. A little shout out to my friend Erica, who has tested positive. I wanted to say, I hope you're feeling well soon, my darling, who's in the Netherlands.
Yes.
Okay.
Big shout out to Erica. Okay. Have a great week, Kirsty, and I'll speak to you later. I look forward to you. Hashtag 66 days of videos. Bye.
Okay. Bye.